welcome to Cheap Date. I'm your host, Kathy Arway, and we're on Heritage Radio Station Network here at Roberta's Pizza. It's Monday, November 18th. Sorry, 16th. I'm getting everything wrong today.
Most of it, at least.
Most of it. Well, here. So we're brought to you today by TechSurf, and you can call in today at 718-497-2128 or check out the website, heritageradionetwork.com. So today I thought we'd further the discussion on aphrodisiac foods we're having a couple weeks ago with Yolanda Shoshana and Matt Timms and bring in some of the best and brightest experts on the subject, hopefully. It turns out they had some differing thoughts about the existence of aphrodisiacs, but we'll get to that in just a sec. But I wanted to introduce who these folks are. And if I may attempt to describe everything you do, Rachel, this is Rachel Kramer Bussell.
Bussell.
I can't get anything right today. Anyway, so Rachel, let me just try. You edit the best American erotica books. Best sex writing books. Sorry. Okay. That's the better anthology. I'm just kidding. You also edited an anthology of sex writing called Spanked.
Yes.
Focused around spanking.
And one called Sex and Candy, which is about candy.
Oh my gosh, perfect. Sex. Candy. Okay. So then you also write a blog along with two other writers called Cupcakes Take the Cake. It is the cupcake blog, the quintessential one. And you also write freelance for, I don't know how many things, thefrisky.com, is that one?
Yeah.
Okay, Nerve?
No. And the Daily Beast?
It's okay. The Daily Beast.
I'm just going to let you keep going so I can...
Maybe I should let you take over.
And I run a reading series called In the Flesh Reading Series, which you can find out at intheflushreadingseries.com. There's one this Thursday, and Kathy's reading in January, Sex and Food Night.
I am. It is the quintessential sex and food reading night, I think, in the city.
I think that's
And it's
safe
taking
to say.
Place at Happy Endings.
Yes.
Very appropriately titled bar. Michael, you find that?
I like your silent laughter.
Well, I just
you can laugh.
I'll laugh when I need to laugh. At the moment, I was just enjoying
just
the spectatorness.
A yeah, little heart attack there.
Since I hadn't been introduced yet, I didn't know if I technically needed to exist. No, nothing to be sorry about. You were before.
Okay, so we have a sex food writing expert, and we also have a cooking expert, culinary whiz kid. Not really kid. He has
so much older than
you. Yeah. He does have a beard and mustachio. So this is Michael Serino. Thanks so much for being here today.
Pleasure to meet you.
Great. So you also have a supper club called A Razor Shiny Knife, which is where you do your culinary feats. Can you tell us a little bit about how it works? What is a supper club? Do you get that a lot?
What we do is we put together these culinary events that focus on three individual bits. You know, when I was growing up, I come from a large Italian family, and we were used to cooking together. You know, I don't have like a TV room in my house. We just have a very big kitchen. So all our friends and family used to get together and participate in the process. So about 2 years ago, me and a very good friend of mine named Danielle started doing this similar type of thing where we'd invite people over instead of just serving them food, we'd cook with them.
So Sunday night dinners.
So we'd get together, play bocce, get drunk, and then eventually you need to eat, and a whole bunch of us would get together and cook into the wee hours of the evening. And we realized that there was a big bit of this missing in the New York City food scene and just, I guess, in cooking in general. So we started inviting people we didn't know over to cook and participate in that process. And we discovered that not only is the cooking process really great for socializing, but it's also a good way for learning things, you know, specifically food, but also from the guests. So we used it as an excuse to kind of get interesting people in a room together, teach them how to make something.
Steal their tricks.
Yeah, make pasta or something. Be like, oh.
Their grandmother's pasta tricks.
Or, you know, learn something about like accounting. It seems silly, but like, you know, like you're talking about making pasta and you're making pasta and you're like, oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, you know, I'm a financial analyst and I work with oil futures or something. Oh, that's great. But on the side, I make guitars. Oh, I play guitar. And then all of a sudden you're talking about his passion and her passion, and two people are starting to connect on something that's a little bit more interesting than what they do for a daily basis or what they more to what they love. And it's kind of opened up by this process of cooking. And then recently we got to a level of doing that well enough where we could have people socialize and learn, where we wanted to make things theatrical happen as well. And we do all sorts of interesting types of events.
It's totally true. And as far as those conversations, that's one aspect of it I hadn't really thought about too much. I definitely know that I've learned pretty much everything I know about cooking from cooking with you guys, Razor Shiny Knife, and the like experiences, you know, just from cooking with people rather than sitting in a classroom or reading a book.
Exactly.
Is where it happens. But I think the last time I went to cook at your place with a bunch of people, we were making meatballs for the great meatball contest in the city. And there's some guy that we were talking for a while, and he happened to, his wife worked at the Rachel Ray Show.
Right.
Totally, like, you know, same fields we were talking about. Cause I was like, oh, and I happen to be writing this book about food. And he's like, oh, my wife's, you know, works on TV and the Rachel Ray Show. And then I learned this funny fact that, Rachel Ray is crazy about her dog, and she has her dogs. She lets dogs run around the office. Like, his wife's dog can hang out on a food show. And I thought that was really neat to learn.
And you see, that's the kind of thing. Like, there's all these connections between human beings that I personally really enjoy. And one of the best ways to do that is through something that's really open socially. And cooking happens to be something that can connect. You know, you might like country music, you might like hip hop, but pretty much everybody likes food. You know, arts can be different, reading can be different. Some people are conservative, some people are liberal, but you get people around, and if it's tasty, it's generally going to be tasty. So you can kind of work around that whole thing and kind of find fun and interesting bits that way to connect with people.
It's amazing, because this is something that used to happen quite a lot, and you found that to be a missing aspect in New York City. You certainly don't get that to that extent in a restaurant unless you happen to be in cahoots with the kitchen staff and can run around, run amok.
Which is very tough, yeah.
Yeah, right. But yeah, a lot of people were telling me when I did this no eating out for 2 years, they were like, how did you socialize? How did you hang out? How did you go on dates? You know, so this is one of the fun things about it.
Dating is tough, though, by not going out at all.
Hey, haven't people gone to your supper club dinners on a date before? Do you notice this happening?
A couple, you know,
I've seen this.
We had one guy who, you know, had been really focused on this one girl for a very long time, I guess, and this was his way of kind of broaching the whole, we should try to make this a little bit more serious situation. And that was nice. They ended up staying for the 24-hour dinner, ended up staying like for 18 hours that night, going home for a couple hours and then coming back for breakfast. So I could only,
oh my gosh,
hopefully they had a great time
hot
with
date.
Themselves. Yeah, hot date, exactly.
And more intimate
date,
too.
Yeah.
Well, they had been seeing each other for a while at that point, but I think he was hoping to make it more of a commitment thing, and this was his way of being really impressive with interesting bits to do. I don't know. I mean, again, I was cooking a lot of food at the time, and I was only catching little snippets.
Were you making some aphrodisiac food at the time?
Yes.
Was that what happened?
Exactly. I was able to catapult their love for each other into the next morning by serving them oysters and chocolate.
Oh, okay.
And candied.
That's always good.
Candied deer hearts or something like that.
Candied deer hearts.
Is equally as ridiculous
hearts.
As oysters.
I never thought of that. Hearts is an aphrodisiac. No.
Yeah, no. Actually, nothing is an aphrodisiac, is what I was saying before. But I mean,
if there were,
I mean, I guess a lot of the aphrodisiacs that people quote unquote think are aphrodisiacs either resemble sex organs or have something to do with the process of love. So oysters.
Right. Asparagus, that's one we went into.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of cultures that just like eating penises.
Yeah, you know, we're
there
happen to be pasta sheeps, like male genitalia, apparently.
Oh, I mean, yes.
But that's like,
but that's very
kind of,
that's Eric, that's kind of old.
Bachelorette party, like, I don't know, it seems kind
of. You'd think so, but it's actually a traditional, there's traditional shapes.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, where the chefs were probably like, hee hee.
Yeah, not the ones that just look like a little penis.
No, not like you go to Christmas Street and pick up some pasta.
which is extremely bachelorette party.
And then you could put it in a creamy Alfredo.
Now you're just getting silly.
I know, sorry. That was terrible.
When is your next event?
The next dinner that we're doing is actually an Italian dinner. We're doing a series of three dinners. Since I come from a very large Italian family, we always did Christmas Eve together, which is a feast of seven fishes, right?
And it is?
Yes, technically, for Italians. Christmas Eve.
I'm Jewish, so
seven fishes. So what we're doing is on December 10th, my friend Jonathan and Brian have a wine club called the Noble Rot, and they're going to be doing an Italian wine seminar, and we're going to be serving some Italian snacks with that. That's the 10th. The 11th, we're doing Christmas Eve, which is going to be a Friday night. It's going to be I think it's going to end up being 9 courses, but we're doing the Feast of the Seven Fishes. So this is going to be traditionally inspired Italian food, but all seafood. And then on Saturday, we're doing Christmas Day, which is going to be much more traditional kind of laid back meal. There's going to be a goose, there's going to be pasta, there's going to be meat sauce. And everything's going to be very, very Italian oriented in those 3 days. And then Jonathan, I believe, is going to be doing a performance, a one man performance of A Christmas Carol both nights.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to go.
Johnny Cigar. He's the best. Wow.
But I wouldn't say that to him personally because I think it might inflate his ego a little bit. Yeah.
Well,
but I mean, he's decent. At least we could say that. I mean, he's better than average.
I will say he's quite good as a performer. So,
awesome.
So we got Feast of Seven Fishes coming up. What's your Christmas
We are
like?
Having a five. Well, this is not about Christmas, but we're having a 5-year blogiversary party on December 3rd at
for
the
cupcakes?
Roger Smith Hotel for Cupcakes Take the Cake. And we're in the process of asking like every bakery in town and in New Jersey, because people apparently come from New Jersey to bring us cupcakes, as they did on Saturday at our meetup, to come to Roger Smith Hotel and bring us cupcakes. So
this could quite possibly...
We're going to have like probably hundreds of cupcakes.
Yeah, I was going to say this could be the largest cupcake gathering in quite
a while. Yeah, we're going to be prepared this year, because we did one last year and like... we kind of ran out of cupcakes and we had to get more, and people were like, where are the cupcakes? And they got kind of hostile, and I was like, okay,
ooh,
people. So we're going to RSVP only so that we know how many people are coming so we can be ready.
Cupcakes are not something you should get aggressive about.
Yeah, sometimes people get like snotty, and I'm like, this is my happy place. This is
how
my,
many
like,
cupcakes do you need to eat?
Not stressful,
how many can
fun,
should you eat in one
place?
Sitting? Yeah.
I guess it really just depends on how big they are, right?
One time I ate like 5 cupcakes once, and it was too many.
That's like, okay.
Over a night, but like it was like my dinner, but it was
like
too
2
much.
Slices of cake.
But it was...
No, cupcakes are big.
It was probably more than 2 slices.
Well,
of
nowadays
cake,
I see mini cupcakes more so than often.
Minis are good.
I mean, yeah, more so than that.
Now, if you work on the muffin kind of side of things, I know a corn muffin can have an unconscionable amount of calories.
I actually asked someone the other day, I was like, why do muffins have like 5-6 more hundred calories? Like, that's a lot of calories.
Is it the density?
I didn't get an answer. They were like, oh, they're big and they're like, I don't know, butter.
I'm going to conclude that cupcakes are not typically an aphrodisiac food.
Well,
the calorie, you know, just
but you could like feed it to someone. I mean, I think it depends what the context is.
Okay.
Like if you bring cupcakes to a date.
Do you ever, do you ever have cupcakes at the, in the flesh nights?
We have cupcakes every time. And
okay.
We're having special cupcakes with
raunchy
my face
ones
on them.
Oh, with your face on them. Ooh.
And my cleavage.
There
we go. That's sexy, isn't it? No, it's my logo, which is drawn by Molly Crabapple.
That is a really cool
who's
logo.
A phenomenal artist.
I'm getting special art cupcakes.
That is a really great. So they're going to paint this image onto each cupcake.
I don't know how
cupcake.
They're going to do it, but...
They're not going to make, like, breast cupcakes
magic?
Or butt
no,
cupcakes?
No,
or,
I didn't
no?
ask. It's,
okay.
But I asked them to do that. And these chocolate banana ones that are... They look amazing.
Wow.
And we're having 300 mini cupcakes from Bake My Melissa. So if you don't get a cupcake, that's your problem, because, like... There's
going to
be
up.
More than enough. You know, people Hit. Are like, there weren't enough. I'm like, there were like 200 cupcakes.
Come early to In the Flesh.
Yes.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. If you want to call in, the number is 718-497-2128.
Thank you.
Hey, we're back on Cheap Date. I'm Kathy Irway. This is Heritage Radio Network. Brought to you today by TechServe. We're at Roberta's Pizza. So today we're talking with Rachel Kramer Rachel Kramer Bustle. I keep saying it wrong.
People say it wrong all the time. And they spell it wrong.
I spell it wrong all the time.
It's okay. Yeah. There's not like some other one with like slightly, you know, people know.
So okay. Those long.
I was trying to say like names. Yeah, it's no big deal.
Okay, so Rachel Kramer Bussell. No, I got it.
You want me to take care of this part for the rest of the afternoon?
Yes, please do. Address all my guests from now on. Michael, you should come on every show, seriously.
And just address your guests for you, and then sit quietly the rest of the evening.
Exactly. So
who's that guy in the announcer. Corner? Yeah, he's the announcer.
So, okay, actually, and can you clarify, because last time we had a great chat about all these aphrodisiac foods, like things that get your heart racing, you know, maybe it's not obliquely, you know, aphrodisiac inspired, because you could just get, you know, endorphins pumping, or not endorphins, but, you know, heart, blood flow, more, you know, circulating better. But you're saying that there's nothing that is specifically aphrodisiac whatsoever. Well, that's a myth.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, there's no chemical that the human body reacts to in a sexual way. So there's no food and or scent that if you were to smell or to eat would immediately cause you to have sexual desire. There are
across
things
across the board.
Yeah,
right?
Just like like there's no like, you know, there's no pheromones. Pheromones for humans have not been isolated. There might be, but they haven't been isolated yet, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the research that I've done on food and aphrodisiacs more leans towards, as you were saying, increase in blood flow, which is essentially what Viagra does.
Yeah.
And
conjuring images that are,
and kind of just like a symbolic type thing. So if you look at, you know, in Chinese culture, there's shark fin soups, that in and of itself has nothing to do with blood flow stimulation or anything like that. It's the process of emasculating another animal for the sake of bringing that masculinity into your body. They're eating the penises from rhinos is something that's happened before, or cows and things of that nature. I mean, or bulls. I mean,
taking the animal spirit for yourself.
Kind of. I mean, oysters look like, you know,
female
genitalia.
Things.
Yeah. I mean, like all that type of stuff. It's all kind of more a spiritual kind of metaphorical type thing than an actual physical reaction.
Right. So it's all myth. It's all theory.
I mean, I don't know if it's myth or theory. Except
what about potions? You know, we have all these great, you know, this great legends and history of aphrodisiac potions and tinctures and who knows, smells.
What is that? There's that great perfume that they used to sell in the 70s. I can't remember the name of it, that had like monkey piss in it and stuff like that.
But,
yeah, that was...
A perfume in the 70s?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it. Spanish Fly.
Right.
Spanish Fly is like urine and rotting something
right.
or other. And
that was a... Perfume is a weird subject. There's the musk is actually whale vomit. Or something vomit. I can't remember. I think it is.
And you know what's phenomenal about all that stuff is that each human being has gene receptors that tell each human what they smell and whether or not it's palatable. So like there's a specific gene that if it's turned off, cilantro is unpalatable to human beings.
Like, what exactly does unpalatable mean?
Like if you smell cilantro, you want to kill people. Like,
whoa.
Like my friend just hates cilantro so much, but it's a genetic thing. Her body can't process that smell in a palatable sense. Like, the human male musk, and there's another gene on that same chain that if it's shut off, you know, men will smell atrocious to you.
But there's nothing you can do?
No wonder some people are so averse to cilantro. And there's a chemical reason for that.
Same thing with vanilla. Yeah. Same thing with lavender. There's a lot of these scents and chemical compounds. The human body just either processes or doesn't process. And if it does, then you're okay. If it doesn't, it could throw your entire life
that's
right off.
That's kind of mystery.
Wow.
Hey, Kathy, you have a caller with a question.
All right. Hey, what can we do for you?
Hey, how you doing? My name is Jason. I had a question for you. I was wondering, do you have any suggestions for some gluten-free baked foods?
Actually, there is a terrific blog called The Gluten-Free Girl, and she has tons of recipes. There are several gluten-free cookbooks. Rachel, do you know of any?
I don't know of any specifically, but I know that in terms of cupcakes, like all the time I'm seeing a lot of people selling gluten-free cupcakes. There's another blog, Allergic Girl. Sloan Miller, she has advice about that. And there's, I know there's more gluten-free cookbooks coming next year, too.
Tons. Everybody seems to be gluten-free these days.
It's a big thing.
And what are just some gluten-free, you know, rice? Is that one? No? No, I'm totally
corn
wrong.
As well.
Corn.
Millet.
Millet.
Yeah. I mean, my grandfather had celiac disease, so I have a whole bunch of pasta recipes that are essentially corn-based pasta recipes.
But forget the pasta.
But I can't. I'm terrible at baking, so I have no recommendations for baking without gluten.
Baking is tough because you generally think of wheat. But there's a lot of substitutes. Oats.
Sorghum. Xanthan gum is useful in some regards because it holds binding nature. But again, I don't know the principles of that kind of stuff.
Right.
I can teach you how to make a sponge cake without any starches whatsoever using just gels. That would be helpful to the caller.
Jason, are you still there? Okay, we're good. All right. So I hope his gluten-free troubles are fixed, or his gluten-free girlfriend. Isn't gluten-free more common in women?
I'm not sure. I have several gluten-free family members, but it's mixed.
Oh, it is?
I might have heard that, but I'm not sure.
It seems to me that a lot of people become gluten-free later on in life, and they're generally women.
It is a big diet trend right now. I don't know whether or not it's dietary-based for allergies or purposes
like
that.
I'm seeing it a lot. Like, I have a Google News alert on, like, gluten-free plus cupcakes, and, like, every day.
Gluten-free cupcakes.
Who's that? The crazy woman from The View did that. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, yeah.
She has a G-free diet or something.
She's insane.
I don't watch The View, but I know she has a...
She's insane.
I know she has a... Isn't she the super conservative one?
Yeah, she's the crazy one. Yeah. But the thing with that, though, is I think whether or not you actually need to be gluten-free, the second you start viciously restricting your diet or watching what you're eating, you immediately start to lose weight. So whether it's gluten-free or if you're only going to eat orange food or if you're going to eat just things that are killed on Wednesdays.
You block out a lot of things.
Yeah, and you start, not even just blocking out, but you start paying so much attention to it, you're immediately going to start restricting your calorie intake. You're going to start paying more attention to the food you put in your body, and you're going to eventually lose weight. You know what I mean? Like,
so if I fashion myself a so-called aphrodisiac diet, then I will probably lose weight.
Oysters,
all the better.
And you might have more chocolate. You might have more sex as well.
Yeah. So,
and that burns calories.
It does. It burns calories.
There you go.
There you go.
And I'll look way better too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A healthy glow.
And then you can tell people. You can say, "I'm on
this is my next food challenge." Yeah. But you guys, I have to get other people to help me out with this one too. Because
we're not good.
Yeah, I need a real, no, I'm just kidding. I might need to look into this a bit more because it sounds like a lot of things are
actually,
just untested.
There's this book, The Orgasm Diet, and I've
now
forgotten like exactly what was in
that person on here.
And it actually I forgot. Part of it was eating dark chocolate every day, and part of it was like the omega-3s, I think. It was like about that, and it was like a part of it, I'm sure, was psychological. Like, you're noticing if you think you're on an aphrodisiac diet, you're noticing it. But I sort of tried it, not exactly by the whatever.
Did you try it for to write about it for some of your writings?
Yeah,
cool.
I mean, and
so you really put yourself out there and really tested.
Well,
it was
fairly healthy, it wasn't like eat, you know, potato chips and then you're gonna be turned on all the time. I wonder if there was like the fatty food diet, but like then also aphrodisiac, like the anti diet. If people would do that,
I gotta check this out. Where'd you write about this book?
They wanted me to like blurb it or whatever, so I was like, try it. But I forget the details. But it was something about omega-3s and chocolate. I just remember dark chocolate, which I actually really like dark chocolate. I hadn't eaten that much of it before. It's totally different than milk chocolate.
Absolutely, it's way better. It's more chocolatey. It's more chocolate.
By definition.
Yes. Less cocoa butter.
But I think if you're used to milk chocolate, it's challenging at first. You know,
it
it's
is.
Like,
yeah.
It's like
bigger.
It's just less.
Right.
It's like more adult. That's how I think of it.
Less sweet.
I like that.
More adult. So actually, one of the things I want to ask you, Rachel, is, you know, you write for various... You also... Not only do you edit a lot of sex writing, but you write it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about like putting yourself out there, being public image, and do you get like a lot of, you know,
crazies
coming up to you?
I don't get a lot, but you know, one goes a long way.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's also because I do public events, you know,
right, in the flesh.
I can't really control who comes to those, but I mean, for the most part, like I meet really cool people from all mm-hmm. over. So there's this woman whose piece I'm publishing in Best Sex Writing 2010, who's going to be here from Ireland in December, and she's reading for me. So, like, for the most part, I meet really cool people.
For the most part, and that you and meet really cool people.
Interesting, and it's like maybe I have one thing in common with them that I know about at first, and then it mm-hmm. turns out I have other things. So, like, I went to Toronto, and we did a cupcake meetup, and this woman, Juanita Koo, who has this Sweet Things Toronto, she made me little cupcakes with, like, mm-hmm. that said sex on them.
Oh, that's so fun.
So it's like you meet really interesting mix of people.
They really catered it to you.
Yes, yeah, that was very nice.
And why is that? Why do you write about cupcakes and then sex? Like, that's...
Well, they're really separate. Like, I started mm-hmm. the cupcake blog kind of on a whim. I also started a comedy blog, which no longer exists. I was like, oh, I'll just start this blog, that blog, and cupcakes took off in a ridiculous way.
But, like, it's funny because I think I was talking to somebody else about this, and we felt like there was something really cutesy, flirty, and sexy about cupcakes. And then we finally realized that we're both actually thinking of you in the back of our heads. And we're like, there's some connection there between, like, sex and cupcakes. And then
a lot of sometimes people are like, why are all these sex people into cupcakes? And I think it's because just a lot of people are into cupcakes. But mm-hmm. now there's a little bit of a backlash. Like, there's this article in Vanity Fair this month that's like anti-cuteness, and it's all about how, like, baby videos and animal videos and cupcakes are too cute.
What?
And it tried to be like linking cupcakes and sadism, and I was like, cuteness and sadism, and I was like, these people, some people, and I see it with cupcakes, sometimes people mm-hmm. are like, ew, you have a whole blog about cupcakes? Like, what do you write about? I was like, well, we write about cupcakes. There's like 10,000 posts. There's a lot to say. You know, I mean, there is a lot to say.
I've heard of backlash about cupcakes for, like, health reasons, for, like, you know, kids' birthdays.
I think some people just think it's too twee and, like,
it's just too much.
I kind of think sometimes they think it's too girlish. That's mm-hmm. my take on it.
Yeah. Do you think it's too girlish, Michael? Cupcakes?
I love cupcakes. I'm going to be honest. I think the biggest thing is that it's more of a fad. It feels more like a fad than it does something in particular. And I think the United States have gone through a really big bit of that fad, so to speak, and, like, excitement about it and exuberance mm-hmm. about these small compartmentalized, you know, pastries, I guess you'd say. I was just in London, and it's just starting to become interesting over there. They just got through a whole Jello phase, which
Jello, wow,
yeah, right.
So way behind,
because we hear like whoopie pies, like, all the time. It's like macaroons are the new cupcakes, whoopie pies are the new cupcakes,
or cream puffs, or
this
whatever.
Is the new cupcakes. I have not heard Jello as the new cupcakes.
Jello is not going to make it here like it did in UK. But what I'm saying
is, were there like Jello bars? Like Jello?
No, actually, yeah. We have a set Jigglers? Of friends. No, we have a set of friends. They're called the Jello Mongers, Sam and Harry. They do phenomenal architectural jellies.
Wow.
But when we were over there, you just saw not that Jello's coming this way, but the cupcakes are going that way. So this whole resurgence.
Okay. And in Asia and in
exactly.
Europe.
The migration of the cupcake trend. You're gonna. Yeah. You might have to move to London next.
No. I might.
Or at least go there and see how the Brits are making them.
I have tried some London cupcakes.
I have the Union flag on them.
You know, someone funds our site and I get to go travel all over to all these bakeries. Because there's like cupcakes in Berlin, cupcakes in Malaysia, cupcakes in Hong Kong.
Wow. Great.
South Africa.
Yeah. South Africa, we have yet to see. Check out the Cupcakes Take the Cake blog and Rachel's Travels coming up on that next, hopefully. Also, check out ashinyknife.com for more of what Michael's been up to and is going to do for the Seven Fishes of Christmas. Sorry. Anyway.
You're very close.
Getting everything wrong. And the Noble Rots wine pairing dinner coming up on the 10th. And also, who else is going to be at the Sex and Food Night on January 21st?
January 21st. We have Emily Farris of Casserole Crazy.
There we go.
And Yolanda Shoshana.
The Luscious Life. And me.
And Heather Whaley, Eat Your Feelings.
All right.
Go to InTheFleshReadingSeries.com.
Thanks so much, Rachel, for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. And I actually will be away next week, but we'll be back the next week after that. I want to thank Jack Inslee and all the folks here at Heritage Radio Network. I want to thank TechServe. And this is Cheap Date. I'm Kathy Array. Thanks so much.